Hello, I'm Ben Eagle and welcome to this episode of Meet the Farmers. This episode is slightly different to the norm in that I'll be speaking to not one farmer but several, and indeed others involved in food and farming. And that's because earlier this month I travelled to Oxford to attend the Oxford Real Farming Conference, which is now in its 8th season. About 800 people attended the conference this year to talk about all sorts of issues to do with sustainable farming today, from soils to encouraging new entrants to agriculture, and of course what farming policy should look like post-Brexit. There are actually two farming conferences held in Oxford in early January. The Real Farming Conference is held at the Town Hall, whereas the more established Oxford Farming Conference is held at the University. Traditionally, the two conferences have been seen to be at opposite ends of the philosophical spectrum, with the Real Farming Conference focusing on small-scale, sustainable and family farming, and the Oxford Farming Conference the domain of larger businesses and politicians. However, there appears to be greater common ground now, surely a good sign, and similar topics are discussed at each conference, such as cover cropping and soil health. However, I think it will be a little while before two conferences become one. I began the conference by speaking to Colin Tudge, who co-founded the conference and recently launched the College for Real Farming and Food Culture.
Real farming is short for enlightened agriculture. And enlightened agriculture is agriculture that is expressly designed and intended to provide good food for everybody, forever. And to do that without cruelty, without injustice, and without wrecking the rest of the world. I think the world at large has begun to realise that, as it were, the corporate narrative that we must have more and it can only be done by industrial farming and more high-tech and more big business, more and more centralisation, is wrong, disastrously wrong.
Why is there still a need for two conferences?
Because the two conferences represent two different worldviews. If you want enlightened agriculture, i.e. real farming, then you have to farm as if you really wanted to look after the world. In other words, you need agroecological farming. You need farming that is very, very complicated. That's where the diversity comes in. Therefore, you need it to be skills intensive. In other words, you need lots of farmers. Therefore, there is no real advantage in scale up. If there's no advantage of scale, therefore you say, well, the units themselves, in other words, the farms, probably should be small to medium sized. If you want to maximise wealth from farming, maximise profit, which is the neoliberal model, then you do the complete opposite. And so long as oil remains affordable, it is cheaper to replace labour with industrial agriculture and with big machines than it is to employ lots of people. So what you finish up with, if you go down the neoliberal route, maximisation of profit, is what I would call neoliberal industrial agriculture, which is zero labour if you can manage it, which with robots you're getting close to, huge inputs of agrochemicals and all the rest on vast estates, bigger and bigger and bigger. When I worked at Farmers Weekly, which I did for a time in the early 1970s, a 100-acre farm was considered pretty big. Nowadays, the average farm size in Britain is something like 86 hectares, which is 250, 300 acres. And it's common these days, places like Cambridgeshire, in particular Suffolk, Norfolk, to have estates of 1,000 hectares. They're common. And instead of having diversity, which is vital, if you're going to run it by machines and run it with industrial chemistry, you have to keep the husbandry as simple as possible. So instead of having diversity, you go for monoculture. Now, they demonstrably are, in biological terms, hugely inefficient. I mean, the people that run it, the economists are in charge, and they say it's very efficient because it's cheap. They're measuring efficiency purely in terms of money. But if you measure it in any other terms, like, you know, social terms or terms of happiness, or indeed in biological terms, what are you doing to the biosphere? They're disastrous. You know, they're about as inefficient and horrible as you could possibly get. But that's official policy.
Do you see Brexit, is that term, as an opportunity or a threat?
It is an opportunity to create a system of agriculture in Britain which is enlightened. In other words, we would have these small mixed farms, etc., lots of people on the land. We would think in terms of self-reliance rather than in terms of producing food for commodities. That is an opportunity, but there's no sign at all that it will happen. And what is much more likely that is we will throw ourselves into the global market scenario ever more zealously. The only reason I'm hopeful for the future is because, frankly, of meetings like this. There are lots and lots of people out there, increasing numbers of people who can, A, can see what is wrong, and B, can see how to do it better. The question is whether the world can, as it were, get its act together before the world is wrecked irredeemably. And the question is, can we reverse things before we fall off the edge, basically?
Colin Tudge there. My first day at the conference consisted of a good amount of networking, for that's what these events are brilliant for, meeting and speaking to like-minded people. And I went along to several presentation sessions, including one on storytelling, in which Graham Harvey, perhaps best known as the agricultural advisor to the Archers, and Philip Limbury, co-author of the book Farmageddon, spoke to those attending about the power of stories, and in constructing stories that change people's perceptions and attitudes regarding food and food production, which is certainly something that I endeavoured to do on the Thinking Country blog and through the Meet the Farmers podcast. Other presentations on the first day included a session chaired by Liz Bowles of the Soil Association on making minimum tillage work without glyphosate, a session on rewilding, during which wildlife consultant Derek Gow, Christopher Price from the CLA, Charlie Burrell from the NEP Estate, which I visited last year, and others debated how we might make space for rewilded landscapes across Britain without compromising on food production. Finally, there was also a session in the afternoon which focused on agroforestry and how delegates might use it in a practical manner, as well as many others, of course. That's the thing with these conferences, you can never go to everything. However, one of the most enjoyable sessions I attended came quite late in the day, away from the main hall. Abby Rose from the Farmerama Farming podcast and Megan Perry from the Sustainable Food Trust had organised a fringe session for young farmers from both conferences to meet and discuss common ground and experiences. And after the session, I spoke to Abby and asked her how the idea for holding it had come about.
That came about because actually Rebecca Lawton, who's a member of the Land Workers Alliance, at the final session at last year's Oxford Real Farming Conference, she called for us to build bridges. And it was really one of the most inspiring moments or talks I've seen in years, and it stuck with me ever since. My hope is that in 20 years' time, we don't have a need for the Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference to go on at the same time, in the same city, down the road from each other, and we basically don't talk to each other. If that's true in 20 years' time, I find that a really depressing future. So we thought, okay, well, how is that going to change at all? What conversations need to start being had now? And of course, it's our generation of farmers who are starting to build their businesses now, and a lot of the young people taking over from their parents. And if we start those conversations now, just sow the seeds, I think that potentially in 20 years' time, we could see a completely different agricultural setup in the UK.
Ben Robinson, farmer in Hampshire, with beef, sheep, arable and grapes as well, producing wine. I'm also regional chairman of the southeast area of Young Farmers Clubs. Just had a fantastic session with the Sustainable Food Trust as part of the Oxford Real Farming Conference. Some brilliant people there discussing fantastic ideas, right from micro dairies through to producing their own cider and apple juice, larger scale livestock farmers, as well as arable. A bit of everything really, but some really good positive young people looking for future opportunities in agriculture. I think as a generation, we are quite hungry to make a go of it. We're hungry for knowledge. Luckily, that hunger can be satisfied by conferences such as this one and the Oxford Farming Conference. You know, it is our future to grasp, and we better get on with it.
Ben Robinson there, and before that, Abby Rose from the Farmerama podcast. This year, the organisers of the conference invited all delegates to bring along a sample of soil from their land or any land that has some meaning to them. The idea was that each sample would be added to a soil sculpture, which would develop throughout the event. I spoke to dairy farmer Jane Hewson just before she added her sample to the sculpture.
Hello, I'm Jane Hewson. I'm from near Melton Mowbray. We've got a rare breed dairy and we sell our own milk, cream and cheese.
And why did you come to the conference today?
Well, we're a Pasture for Life farm and we've learnt so much from them, and you know, it's always been a very exciting event and I wanted to come and discover what it was all about.
So this is your first time?
It is,
first time,
yes. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And I see that you've brought some soil for the soil sculpture.
Yes,
I
have.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
I can, yes. The area that we live on, the farm, is on what's called red land, and that's because from the 1800s to the 1960s it was mined for ironstone. So my husband's father came to the farm in the 1930s, and everybody had gone bankrupt after a year because the soil was so poor. You can imagine after it had been quarried. So since then they've set about testing the soil, seeing what it was lacking and building it up, and it's now, we don't use fertilisers, and yeah, we just feed grass and the herbal lays that we grow.
On the second day of the conference, the first session I attended was called Nurturing Nature Within Farming, and this largely related to the land sparing, land sharing debate, whether boosting biodiversity and improving the state of nature on farms is compatible with land that is ultimately meant to be for food production. The session was chaired by Patrick Holden from the Sustainable Food Trust, and the three speakers spoke eloquently from their different perspectives. Jenny Phelps from the Farming and Wildlife Advisory Group in Gloucestershire, Ian Boyd, a hill farmer in the Cotswolds, and Ian Dillon, who is the manager of the RSPB's Hope Farm, an arable farm in Cambridgeshire. All three showed how biodiversity can be significantly increased on farms without overly impacting on the bank balance, and indeed, in Ian Boyd's case, actually positively aiding the marketing opportunities for his beef. There's been a lot of negative rhetoric about the new countryside stewardship scheme, with fears that many farmers may see it as being overly complicated to carry out practically. I spoke to Jenny Phelps after the presentations about environmental stewardship and its future.
Farmers are bombarded now with multiple different initiatives. So it's not just countryside stewardship. There's people coming to talk to them about flooding. There's people coming to talk to them about reducing pesticides. There's initiatives around pollinators. There's a million different things that farmers are saying, you know, how do all these organisations and individuals and initiatives work, and how do they join up? And I think what they need is help and support to be able to confidentially be able to discuss and understand these strategies and frameworks that are being evolved all the time, and actually they forget to tell the farmers who they're evolving these structures over their land, what that might mean and what the opportunities are. And I think when people don't have the knowledge of what the opportunities are, they tend to shut the farm gate and go, oh, it all seems a bit scary because I don't really understand it and I might not benefit from being engaged. And actually what we found is that farmers really want to know, but they need to trust the people that are giving them that advice. And that when they come to you and you ask them what are their challenges, that they will say, well, I'm finding it hard to make a living because my soil is degraded, which means I have to rely on chemical inputs, or my yields are good, but my profit margins are really low. And when you can explain to them in detail about, you know, where they might get the opportunity or the funding for rebuilding their soils, how they might rest their soils through new countryside stewardship options, which actually have very well designed, if not that well targeted. There's some brilliant options there that have been put through the Rural Development Programme that are specifically to deliver all the things we've talked about at this conference. So the primary focus of the Rural Development Programme was about rebuilding soils, rebuilding organic matter, protecting water resources, rebuilding biodiversity, helping sustainable food production, relocalisation, adding value, all the things that we've talked about. But the difficulty with those processes, that the way they've come out is the fact that they're so complex, the forms are too complicated, too long, the rigour of accountability and fitting a real field into a hypothetical box is really challenging. So I think what we've learned from the new scheme is the fact that it's actually brilliant in its concept, what it's trying to achieve. What it isn't brilliant at is actually making it so that farmers can easily get into what we all need as a society for it to deliver. So I think what farmers need more than anything is help and support. They need to be able to have a better standing in society and stop being blamed for everything, because they're not aware of all these different changes, of all these different... They're just trying to make a living. And I don't think there's any other industry where people who are just trying to make a living get so much scrutiny and so much criticism. While the people who are doing the criticising are quite often buying the cheap food or demanding things from those products to be available and cheap and unseasonal, that actually drive all the unsustainability of the farming they are so criticising, and the negative impacts of the things that actually... the disbenefits. So the decline in biodiversity, the impact on water quality and flooding and all the other things that society wants us to heal as farmers.
On a personal level, what is your take-home message from this conference?
My take-home message from is the fact that I think that we are going in the right direction, that relocalisation is something that we have to strive for. I think that my only criticism, I think, would be is that we need to welcome people who have other views to come to us. I think this language of us and them about the farmers down the road, all the people or the people influencing farmers down the road, is sounds quite a barrier. And actually, they may have different opinions, but they won't come to dialogue with us unless we keep an open door. And I think our language needs to be really important. I think there is a lot of discussion in the other conference about what we're talking about. And I think there's more common ground than people are aware of. So actually dissolving that barrier is really, really important in my view.
Jenny Phelps. One of the rooms at the conference was coordinated by the Lamb Workers Alliance, the LWA, which is a producer-led organisation of small-scale producers and family farmers. I went along to one of their sessions about farming outside the CAP, which was chaired by Adam Payne, a farmer from West Dorset, who is also part of the LWA. Afterwards, I spoke to Adam about the organisation, and I also couldn't resist asking him about his views about life after Brexit for smaller-scale farmers.
So my name's Adam Payne. I'm a farmer in West Dorset producing sheep, pigs and mixed vegetables on a small farm, 45 acres. The Lamb Workers Alliance is a union of small-scale farmers and growers. And we represent currently around 650 farmers, lamb workers, coppice workers. And so we're trying to protect the interests of the smaller-scale producers that are left out of the representation of the National Farmers Union. Historically, there's been a massive gap in the UK of any organisations protecting the interests of the smaller scale farmer, and that's, you know, I think, largely why we've lost so many of those small family farms in the last few decades. So our mission really is to engage with that in a threefold process. First of all, by building solidarity and skills to share among farmers to create more of a kind of culture around that solidarity and mutual aid. The second is advocacy, and the third is policy. So really trying to get the voices of producers into political discourse.
So obviously at the conference, that's an automatic process. Everyone here is a convert. How do you then take that into the outside world?
Advocacy is media, is really trying to reach out to the media channels that exist, both kind of formal and informal, mainstream and alternative, to really explain the issues we face, to explain to the public why small farms need different kinds of policy than larger farms and industrial farms, why we suffer differently from market decisions, from consumer decisions. And the second is political, and that's really reaching to MPs, being more present in Parliament, being more present in select committees, and explaining those basic differences that small farms don't thrive in the same conditions as industrial farming, and they provide different kinds of social benefits. And we need to, if we want to protect the environment, rural employment, high quality food, then we need to think quite differently about the policies we put in place.
You've been running quite a few sessions here at the conference. Can you summarise some of those sessions and say what some of the outputs have been?
Yeah, so the Lamb Workers Alliance coordinates one of the rooms in the Oxford Rural Farmer Conference. So we do, you know, 8, 9, 10 sessions over a couple of days. And we try and make a real mix of kind of sessions. So some are very practical. The next one coming up here is about appropriate technology for small farms, with various different farmers and growers sharing some of their innovations. And that's really important because a lot of the equipment that you need to work at a smaller scale is hard to come by because it's no longer produced. The first session this morning was about cultivation techniques for producers. And the one I've just coordinated now was called Farming Outside the CAP. And it was a debate around the policy that we want to see put in place after Brexit. We had some input from a Norwegian delegate from a small farmers union in Norway explaining the fantastic systems they have in Norway, where farmers unions are really involved in policy making, and where they have quite a protected market that's allowed a really difficult landscape, a real difficult geology, difficult ecology to really thrive and provide a huge amount of the nation's food. And there's been a whole range of other sessions over the course of the 2 days, but yeah, basically trying to marry the practical with the political.
As a farmer, what would your post-Brexit policy look like?
Well, to me, I'm a small-scale farmer. The vast majority of my markets are local. We sell to restaurants, we sell to consumers, but we sell in national livestock markets as well. to me, the real key principles of post-Brexit policy. One would be national, really working towards national self-reliance in food and just getting away from the current model we have where every message we get from government is we have to export more. And we ended up with a system where we export huge amounts of the same things that we import, and we lose, basically, British farmers lose market access through that process. Whereas if we focus on primarily national self-reliance, really support local production of the commodities, the foods that we can produce, we would benefit. The second one is a restructuring of the subsidy system. And the way it works at the moment is puts me at a massive competitive disadvantage with a much bigger farm who is already able to achieve the economies of scale that can mean that they can afford to sell at lower prices. They're much more likely to be already well mechanised, and they have in addition a per hectare payment that allows them to subsidise loss-making areas of their business. Now, that's completely the wrong way around. No other sector of industry do we actively subsidise the big against the small. But at the same time, subsidies are around 50% of UK farm business income. So unless we put in place market measures, we can't just completely remove them. What we need to do is get into a much more sensitive debate about how we support the kind of farming that we want and need, don't just privilege the big against the small, and make a farming system that's able to provide the food, the resources that we need in this country, and whilst delivering employment, whilst delivering the kind of environmental outcomes that we need, whilst maintaining traditional landscapes that we all love.
Yeah. And finally, there's been a lot of talk about storytelling at this conference. What story would you like to tell?
I think I'd like that people hear the story of the smaller scale producers. I mean, a huge amount of consumers in the UK see UK farming as very industrialised, as all massive farms, disconnected from their local communities, disconnected from their economy. But it's actually just not true. And we have 98,000 farms under 20 hectares in the UK. We still have, although we're the second largest average farm size in Europe, we still have a huge amount of small-scale producers who really are working the land really well. They're producing amazing quality food, but they're not recognised. Their role's not recognised. So the story I'd tell would just be the story of daily life on a small farm, on a family farm. And what I want people to know how much energy, how much passion people put into this, but how little reward they get.
Adam Payne there from the Land Workers Alliance. Adam was describing there the seemingly massive disparities between farming systems in the UK, and it's clear that small-scale farmers require a different kind of support to the larger businesses. But, like Jenny Phelps was saying earlier on, there needs to be dialogue that is collaborative and more all-encompassing, at least so that conversations can take place involving all farmers, organic and conventional, large and small, ultimately so that the best ideas can be shared. It's important not to forget that whilst there may be two conferences going on in the same city at the same time, ultimately they are both about food production and how landscapes, how the environment is managed. For the first time ever this year, a joint session was held between the Real Farming Conference and the Oxford Farming Conference, which enabled discussions to take place involving delegates from both camps. There is some increasingly common ground, at least when it comes to issues such as how to manage soil sustainably and reduce inputs. During lunch on the second day, I spoke to Rob York, who is a rural commentator from South Wales, who had attended sessions at both the Oxford Real Farming Conference and the Oxford Farming Conference, and he described to me this increasing existence of common ground.
I bumped into Rob York, rural commentator, who has been up and down the road throughout the few days. And Rob, I'm interested in your take on each conference.
Ben, thanks for asking me, but I tell you, the most exciting thing for me coming down from Abergavenny was Tuesday night, a joint event for the first time between the Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference. A nice cheese event, and it was great, 100 people there. The next day, let me think, Oxford Farming, it was then the big political speech. She wasn't able to say much because, of course, there's all this stuff going on, all this kind of Brexit. It's impossible for her. And then, nipping back to the Oxford Real, nice, juicy conversation with the National Trust and the CLA and some rewilders. It was probably not the competitive stuff that a lot of people want, but it was exciting for the fact that people were discovering, hey, there's that common ground that we didn't think existed. Talking about combative, there was a back to Oxford Farming. After that, today was Monbiot, NFU, and the National Trust. And again, I think people were probably disappointed there wasn't enough blood on the stadium. But in fact, that was because it went better than people could have expected. A few little tricky questions at the end, which weren't tricky, but the answers were like, shall we farm beauty? Shall we farm this or that? Was actually not the story. The bigger story was the fact that people can sit and have dialogues together without ripping each other's throats out. And I think that's the future. Gone are the idealistic days of both of these conferences. There must be more crossover before Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference. The whole thing is the real deal now. It's not about elitist views from either side. And I think it's time to bring it together for the greater good rather than personal reasons.
It is usual at the end of conferences for people to reflect on what they have learnt or taken away from their time there. And so I asked a few delegates what their take-home message of the conference might be.
It's been inspiring to be here. I think there's huge opportunity for the Commonwealth to band together on the change that's needed in agriculture through communication. Just the networking opportunities here have been incredible. And it's just about everything is fragmented, and if we can bring all our ideas and knowledge together, we'll be able to crack it. We'll be able to crack a new agricultural system that the Commonwealth can share right from the soil to the plate. I've been working in New Zealand for 4 or 5 years on this, but I really feel here in Britain there is a huge momentum and lift and energy for the paradigm shift that is needed. I must congratulate Colin, Touch, and these people that have got this together. I think 8 years ago they had 37 people here. There's now 800. Yeah, just really, really fantastic. Very, very positive.
So from my perspective, what's been really positive is meeting people, local people to here, because I'm local to here, who I can start working with and start developing what I want to do, because I'm trying to get into micro dairying or some kind of dairy processing. So that's what's been really brilliant this year for me, has been to make those connections and to actually have some options now where I've got some land that I can use.
Yeah, I think probably the most exciting thing for me being here is just being able to chat to other people about, you know, doing similar things, speaking to other younger farmers as well, because you can sometimes feel a bit isolated, you know, because we're all kind of disparate and spread around a bit. So just being able to share ideas and, yeah, have like-minded conversations.
My own thoughts on the conference after 2 days of discussions and presentations. Well, I think I'll take away two key messages from it. Firstly, farmers need to find ways of making their own individual farms and businesses resilient in the face of potential threats, of which there are many. There is also the need for a support network to enable that resilience and make it easier for farmers to provide that resilience. The second relates to the theme of storytelling, which has been something that lots of people have mentioned, both during the sessions themselves, but also in conversations. And the duty of storytellers to present food and farming in a positive manner and to tell the fantastic stories of what is already going on. Perhaps my favourite session was actually the Fringe session, which was organised by Abby Rose of Farmarama and the Sustainable Food Trust, and that was held for young farmers from both conferences to meet, to debate, to see what common ground they have and to see how they could help each other moving forward. There is room for diversity in farming, and there is no single system that is the go-to system to use. Conferences like this enable conversation and debate. They're a great opportunity to learn from others and to make new contacts. I know I've learned a lot, and I look forward to the conference in 2018.
This programme was presented and produced by Ben Eagle and mixed by Tom Bland in Bristol for thinkingcountry.com.